But with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Pretty Nails, Milo's Restaurant, and McCandless Photography, located on the lower level, still using a traditional film process to create contemporary portraits.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from World Harvest Foods, celebrating 15 years of serving the community and 5 years at their current location, with an anniversary tasting event on Saturday, April 2nd from 10 to 5. Over 100 items will be featured, including cheeses, olives, chocolates, baklava, and more. World Harvest at the intersection of 6th and University, Champaign.
And now we take you to a meeting between the new leader of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, and Israeli Prime Minister, Ariel Sharon.
I know you hated Yasir and how he misbehaved. I would have made peace faster if he had shaved. I won that last election with 62%. But you know Saddam Hussein won with 110. I think our hope for peace has now grown. So let me throw out the first stone. Embrace me, my sweet embraceable Jew. Excuse me, is that some mace in your shoe? It would be so sweet to talk about the West Bank. If you say you'll meet me, I will send my best tank. George Bush thinks the Mideast talks should be fair. George Bush thinks the Mideast means Delaware. Let's have a midnight meeting. Such a thing would break your new curfew.
Wait a minute, what curfew? You cannot put me under a curfew.
I can put you under a curfew if I want to put you under a curfew.
Radical!
Extremist
May
radical!
May the fleas of 1,000 camels find firm lodging in your nostrils.
May a band of running dogs staple your sister to a monkey from Gaza.
Hey, at least we're talking. My sweet defaceable.
Live from the Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C., it's the Capitol Steps April Fool's edition of Politics Takes a Holiday.
I'm the greatest guest, come try me. So refined, not ever crude. And you can afford to buy me if you give up food. What kind of fuel am I? I cost more than a house. Once people filled their tanks, now it's no thanks. I just came to browse. What kind of cost is this? It isn't real. Sometimes I feel I should be served with fish or veal. To fill your car today, the price you're gonna pay is just as high as Whitney Houston's average Saturday. You get one MPG in your enormous car. Now all the world can see what kind of fool you are.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's been said that the United States Supreme Court is getting a little old. But if that were true, how could you see what you are about to see? Now, for the first time ever, the four liberal justices of the Supreme Court have teamed up to form a fantastic new singing group. You've heard of the Supremes? Well, this isn't them.
Well, you can see Democrats are out of sorts, worried about the Supreme Court.
Getting old! so few friends.
Our legal briefs are now depends.
Are we all right? Are we ill?
Don't give Bush a seat to fill.
If the court starts to sway, even atheists will pray.
As long as he is drooling, Justice Stevens can keep ruling. Gotta
keep us alive. Keep us alive.
Scalia is Chief Justice. It really would disgust us. Gotta
keep us alive. Keep us alive.
Oi.
Keep us alive.
Does anyone remember when they signed the Magna Carta?
I think it was 1215.
Oh, damn it, it's 1 o'clock. I missed it by 45 minutes.
Well, they say Rehnquist, he was King Tut's twin, and Sandra Day knew Anne Boleyn.
Is Clarence older than he seems? His pacemaker runs on steam.
But I'm all right. I feel great with my grapefruit-sized prostate. Oh.
We've been knocked down before.
Once was in the Civil War.
Conservatives will fight them, and the things we'll do to spite them is we're
staying alive, staying alive.
We're moving like a TARDIS. It might be rigor mortis, but we're
staying alive, staying alive.
I see dead people.
And now, in his new role as chairman of the Democratic National Committee, please welcome Howard Dean Quixote, the man of Vermontia.
I'm Dean, the impossible Dean. I'm back on the national stage. I'll go to each state that we lost in. First stop is the state of enraged.
Yeah!
To think I can still run again, to vie for the presidency. Someday I will run this great country. For now, it's the great DNC. That's why the left is counting on me. I never drink decaf, and I'm an MD. But with the state of our party, it's said that instead of a doctor, we need a mortician instead. And I know there are folks who will say I'm without a full deck, and it's weird, but it sometimes appears that I don't have a neck. And the world will be better, or else I might get a little extreme. And now, here is what you're expecting. I'll scream the impossible scream. We'll go to Minnesota, Oklahoma, Alabama, then back to California.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, when people in our line of work see a vicious scandal, we say, what could be better? Actually, let me try that again. JDs and gentlemen, when people in our wine of lurk see a skicious vandal, we say, but could be wetter. Just whip your flirts, it'll start to make sense, I promise. Now, you know, I could sell you the Tory of Jekyll Maxon and all of his trig bubbles and how no one can tell if he's blight or whack. I'm guessing whack. I could sell you the Tory of Rill O'Biley. You all know Rill O'Biley. He works on Fox News as a fraudcaster. I I guess you know that story, all right? I'll tell you what, then, tonight I'm going to tell a story about a scurious sandal in the spurled of warts. That's right, warts. I'm talking specifically about the Bort of Spaceball. Ah, Spaceball. The soys of Bummer. Pamerica's ass time. Now, you know, it used to be. Spaceball was like Palm and Apple Mai, you know. You had all these plate grayers, Candy Sofax, Ray Babuth, Mo DiGiaggio. Oh, sure, there were skiny little tandles once in a while. I mean, there was Reet Pose. Poor Reet Pose, he was a fall of Hamer. He was the slard hiding stort chop for the Cincinnati Seds. And it turns out he was wildly wetting on everything. There was another skig bandle when the players got caught borking their cats.
Oh, yeah.
Cats hate that. Bork, bork, bork. And now, of course, we have the great scoping dandle. That's right, performance enhancing drugs. It all started when guys started hitting their balls over their walls at a Packard setting race. Guys like Mark McGuire. Just flip that one. It's...
There you go.
Sammy Sosa. Jason Giambi. And of course, Barry Bonds. Thus ends the remedial portion of the program. All right. I mean, Barry Bonds, come on, you tears ago, he hit 73 Rome Huns. Now, that is yite a queer, I don't care who you are. Some people say it's because the jaw has been boosted up. Other people say we just need petter bitchers. But I say it's because they're all stopped up on heroids. Rats tight heroids, look at them, they look like they hit at a mall to the boon, these guys. Their muscles are definitely dicker. The knack of their becks looks like a hackage of hot dogs. They're all gonna look like Arnold Schwarzenegger before Schlong. Speaking of Schlong, you have to keep careful with the steroids because there are definitely phytosecs. That's right, too much breastosterone can give you tests. And no one likes a jig-biggly pair of band moves. There's other phytosecs with steroids. Yeah, you can get a rasty gnash, pig bimples, LOE eyes, a halty fart, a weenie teeny, and they can shrink up your jamily fools. Plus, you know, it's not like the spurled of warts needs another skig bandle. Already, you got bro basketball players. You know, the players are bleeping into the leechers and hunching their poop fans. And then there's the sake heisen. What sake heisen? A lunch of the boners got together and lolled for a cock out. So there is no sake heisen, you steer. I mean, sure, we're down here in the ASFU, so coo hairs, really. But, you know, up in Canada, they are kissed, let me tell you. So I guess the story of my mori is this. All right? Guys, just stay off the leroids. Even if you can't make it to burst face. Don't be a base to disgraceball. I mean, after all, let's face it, you do make a pretty good pliving laying with a bunch of jockey cocks. Yankfu!
Who is the guy who rants and raves?
Who likes to make a scene?
He's like a little bulldog.
A Korean Howard Dean.
And if we weren't so scared of him, we'd even say he's mean.
'Cause though he's threatened soul, he hasn't got one.
We think you know who might just fit the bill.
Presenting Kim Jong-il.
How do you solve a problem like Korea?
I have got notes in case you haven't heard. U.S. respect would be a panacea. Your evil axis only lists us third.
Oh, maybe you want to do the world a favor. Maybe you shouldn't poke us with a stick.
But what do you have to see to get you to notice me?
Well, if you had oil, that would do the trick.
Oh, I think that Freud would say this small cation
is compensating for his tiny height.
Hello, everyone. I'm Prince Charles, and this is my mother, the Queen.
Hello!
Yes.
Hello!
Yes, Mother.
Hello!
Knock it off, Mother. As you know, I have a very exciting day coming up, and I just have one small logistical problem. The day I marry my buttercup, should I walk with her?
No!
My bride is scary in the morning. You don't want to see her before 9. Because my Camilla resembles Godzilla, we won't wed in a church this time. My mum, the Queen, is now in mourning. Our family name is in decline.
Thank God your Nana chose Miss Diana to propagate the royal line. Why can't Camilla come to the phone?
She's in the backyard, digging up a bone. Her chin is furry in the morning. She's got a face as bad as mine. So send her to Queen School.
There goes the gene pool.
We won't go to a church.
He could have married Lurch.
But since he's not available, Camilla's fine.
She's my tally-ho.
When you get older, when you retire, not so long from now, how much of your paycheck do you think you'll see coming from Social Security?
If they can't fix it, wouldn't it bite to be old and poor?
Well, put a new hip in, you'll have to start stripping when you're 64.
Maybe we boomers shouldn't complain. Markets are complex. If we start investing, we could get a shock. I once bought some U.S. air stock.
I could keep working, get a McJob, greet at Walmart stores.
A crisis is lurking, you'll have to keep working till you're 84.
I could get a job and model lingerie for senior gals, 'cause you see I'm stacked. I've got double D's.
And if she wears a padded bra, it protects her knees.
Well, don't you be anxious, 'cause there will be time many years from now. Checks from Uncle Sam you simply will not need.
Baby boomers, follow my lead.
Okay.
Live for the moment, spend every dime. There's no crisis when
a much bigger wealth scare,
the cost of your health care, will kill you before.
Thank you.
My fellow Americans, it is I, President George W. Bush. And although that last song might have been construed as critical of my Social Security plan, I still believe in saving the Social Security retirement system because I believe in protecting the elderly. After all, it is the elderly who are at the greatest risk of retirement. Of course, I recently sent my Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, to China. Some Americans have asked, why would I send Rice to China? And the answer is, I sent Rice to China because I believe in irony. But now it's time for me to have an important conversation with my most trusted advisor, my Vice President, Mr. Dick Cheney. One of the most happy-go-lucky men I know. Although sometimes Dick's health isn't the best, his heart, his ticker right there, not the best. And we felt it was important to come out here tonight and let all Americans know that, well, God forbid something does happen to this great man, I stand ready to take over. You know, some people think Dick Cheney needs to be hooked up to a defibrillator. But he always tells the truth. Oh, hey, Dick, I recently heard your daughter's Lebanese.
Just get on with it.
Okay. The main reason that the Dickmeister and I are here is because we want to talk about something that makes us feel really good, and that's our tax cuts for the rich. Doesn't that make you feel spiffy, Dick?
Not just spiffy, but proud, Mr. President. I mean, you all know how Democrats do things. It's tax and spend and tax. But when it comes to Republicans and taxes, well, we like big cuts and we cannot lie. The Democrats can't deny that when Bush comes around with a plan to get him breaks, waves cash in your face, you get sprung. You want to buy more stuff with cash, you can never get enough. Woo! The Dow Jones, it is flying. More bling bling, I am buying. Oh, baby! W cuts tax.
Whistle-wicky. All right.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's a little known fact that the entertainer Cher recently performed for the troops in Iraq. And, well, while she was in Iraq, she realized that she missed performing with a partner. So, while in Iraq, she teamed up with a new partner, and they are here tonight. Please help me welcome Suni and Cher!
They say you're nuts and you're not right, and you don't know Shinola from Shiite.
Oh, your skin's so tight, they say you'll crack. They say someday your ears will meet in back. Babe, I got you. I got you. Oh, your eyes have bags, you need some rest.
Well, those aren't bags, they're technically my breasts. You're like Miss Muffet, they all say.
Because I also have curds in my way. Babe, I got you. I got you.
I did feel awful when Sonny died.
Oh, I dig falafel when it's deep fried.
And when I'm glum and feeling down, my face is numb and I can't frown. Don't let them say your beard's too long. 4 million Islamic radicals can't be wrong.
I hope that you will marry me.
Well, I hope you won't try to learn to ski. I got you in my embrace.
How come you can't move your face? Infidels will pay for sin.
My belly button's on my chin. But
I got you.
You know, Cher, after we get married, will you take my last name for your last name?
Well, honey, I don't have a last name. Huh. But maybe we could hyphenate.
Well, my name is Omar Eef, so we'd be
Omar Sherry.
And now, as this Capital Steps radio show draws to a close, it's a classic red state, blue state confrontation.
Not long ago, the Congresses were liberal democratic.
They all hugged trees.
Banditti tees.
Refused to be pragmatic.
Then voters said, our state is red. Our message is emphatic.
We mock our moral values and our Congress theocratic.
We're super zealous radicals against all things atrocious.
We love Fox News.
They share our views.
And Coulter is precocious.
If you cross me, you'll quickly see that we can be ferocious. We're super zealous radicals against all things atrocious.
Oh,
hold on just 1 second, hold on. I'm sorry, you guys, Diamond cornered the market on moral authority here, all right? Our state is blue, we don't like you, you won't give folks a fair chance.
We'll brag to you of our IQ while yours is like a pear plant.
We've got degrees like PhDs, we don't like your unfair rants.
You've started wars, and what's more, you don't like SpongeBob SquarePants.
We're the super jealous far out left who'd like to run the nation.
Just clear the way.
You wish, no way.
It's classic confrontation.
Yet you can see the irony that most folks in the nation
are super cautious people who could use some moderation.
This Capital Steps radio show was taped in front of a really good-looking and pleasant-smelling audience at the Ronald Reagan International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. It was written by Mark Eaton, Bill Strauss, and Elena Newport, with thanks to Michael Forrest. Now we'd like to thank our performers, first as George W. Bush, a man as smart as both the Olsen twins put together, Kevin Carbitz. As Dick Cheney, a man who served a brief stint as wine steward at the Neverland Ranch, Mike Tilford. Playing Howard Dean, a guy who lost 200 unwanted pounds when he fired his personal trainer, Jack Rolls. The two women in tonight's show, Janet Davidson-Gordon and Elena Newport, would prefer to remain anonymous. And I'm Richard Paul, now gluten-free. On the piano, four-time Nobel Prize winner, Lenny Williams. We'd like to thank our sound engineer, Jim Smith, road crew, Rich Patterson, Andy Foz, and Paul Topros, and permanent press secretary, Bill Hurd. The Capital Steps upcoming album will be released later this month and is entitled Four More Years in the Bush Leagues. If you'd like to order this or other Capital Steps cassettes or CDs, or to find out when the Capital Steps are coming to your area, visit our website at capsteps.com. That's capsteps.com. Or for the cyberphobic, call 1-800-733-STEP. Thanks for listening.
And you can also hear the Capital Steps Politics Takes a Holiday April Fool's Day special tomorrow evening here on AM 580 at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 1:35 Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Humorist David Sedaris is coming to Champaign-Urbana later this month. He'll perform for one night at the Virginia Theater in Champaign Monday evening, April 18th at 8 o'clock. Sedaris is a frequent contributor to the public radio program This American Life. His essays have also appeared in The New Yorker, and he's the author of several books. His latest is Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. Ahead of David's appearance in Champaign later this month, we're giving away some samples of the audio version of Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. There are three complete stories on this 40-minute long CD, and in a moment we'll hear one of them. But in the meantime, if you'd like a copy of this audio sampler, give us a call. If you're one of the first 10 callers, we'll get your name and your address and send the CD out to you. In the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Good luck. Now let's listen to one of David's stories.
Us and Them. When my family first moved to North Carolina, we lived in a rented house 3 blocks from the school where I would begin the third grade. My mother made friends with one of the neighbors, but one seemed enough for her. Within a year, we would move again, and as she explained, there wasn't much point in getting too close to people we would have to say goodbye to. Our next house was less than a mile away, and the short journey would hardly merit tears or even goodbyes for that matter. It was more of a see-you-later situation, but still I adopted my mother's attitude, as it allowed me to pretend that not making friends was a conscious choice. I could if I wanted to, it just wasn't the right time. Back in New York State, we had lived in the country, with no sidewalks or streetlights. You could leave the house and still be alone, but here, when you looked out the windows, you saw other houses and people inside those houses. I hoped that in walking around after dark, I might witness a murder, but for the most part, our neighbors just sat in their living rooms, watching TV. The only place that seemed truly different was owned by a man named Mr. Tomkey, who did not believe in television. This was told to us by our mother's friend, who dropped by one afternoon with a basket full of okra. The woman did not editorialize, rather she just presented her information, leaving her listener to make of it what she might. Had my mother said, "That's the craziest thing I ever heard in my life," I assumed that the friend would have agreed. And had she said, "Three cheers for Mr. Tomkey," the friend likely would have agreed as well. It was a kind of test, as was the okra. To say that you did not believe in television was different from saying that you did not care for it. Belief implied that television had a master plan, and that you were against it. It also suggested that you thought too much. When my mother reported that Mr. Tomkey did not believe in television, my father said, "Well, good for him. I don't know that I believe in it either." "That's exactly how I feel," my mother said. And then my parents watched the news and whatever came on after the news. Word spread that Mr. Tomkey did not own a television, and he began hearing that while this was all very well and good, it was unfair of him to inflict his beliefs upon others, specifically his innocent wife and children. It was speculated that just as the blind man develops a keener sense of hearing, the family must somehow compensate for their loss. "Maybe they read," my mother's friend said. "Maybe they listen to the radio, but you can bet your boots they're doing something." I wanted to know what this something was, and so I began peering through the Tomkeys' windows. During the day, I'd stand across the street from their house, acting as though I were waiting for someone. And at night, when the view was better and I had less chance of being discovered, I would creep into their yard and hide in the bushes beside their fence. Because they had no TV, the Tomkeys were forced to talk during dinner. They had no idea how puny their lives were, and so they were not ashamed that a camera would have found them uninteresting. They did not know what attractive was, or what dinner was supposed to look like, or even what time people were supposed to eat. Sometimes they wouldn't sit down until 8 o'clock, long after everyone else had finished doing their dishes. During the meal, Mr. Tomkey would occasionally pound the table and point at his children with a fork, but the moment he finished, everyone would start laughing. I got the idea that he was imitating someone else and wondered if he spied on us while we were eating. When fall arrived and school began, I saw the Tomkey children marching up the hill with paper sacks in their hands. The son was 1 grade lower than me, and the daughter was 1 grade higher. We never spoke, but I'd pass them in the halls from time to time, in attempt to view the world through their eyes. What must it be like to be so ignorant and alone? Could a normal person even imagine it? Staring at an Elmer Fudd lunchbox, I tried to divorce myself from everything I already knew. Elmer's inability to pronounce the letter R, his constant pursuit of an intelligent and considerably more famous rabbit. I tried to think of him as just a drawing, but it was impossible to separate him from his celebrity. One day in class, a boy named William began to write the wrong answer on the blackboard, and our teacher flailed her arms, saying, "Warning, Will! Danger! Danger!" Her voice was synthetic and void of emotion, and we laughed knowing that she was imitating the robot in a weekly show about a family who lived in outer space. The Tomkeys, though, they would have thought she was having a heart attack. It occurred to me that they needed a guide, someone who could accompany them through the course of an average day and point out all the things they were unable to understand. I could have done it on weekends, but friendship would have taken away their mystery and interfered with the good feeling I got from pitying them, and so I kept my distance. In early October, the Tomkeys bought a boat, and everyone seemed greatly relieved, especially my mother's friend, who noted that the motor was definitely second-hand. It was reported that Mr. Tomkey's father owned a house on the lake and had invited the family to use it whenever they liked. This explained why they were gone all weekend, but it did not make their absences any easier to bear. I felt as if my favorite show had been canceled. Halloween fell on a Saturday that year, and by the time my mother took us to the store, all the good costumes were gone. My sisters dressed as witches, and I went as a hobo. I'd looked forward to going in disguise to the Tomkeys' door, but they were off at the lake and their house was dark. Before leaving, they had left a coffee can full of gumdrops on the front porch, alongside a sign reading, "Don't be greedy." In terms of Halloween candy, individual gumdrops were just about as low as you could get. This was evidenced by the large number of them floating in an adjacent dog bowl. It was disgusting to think that this was what a gumdrop might look like in your stomach, and it was insulting to be told not to take too much of something you didn't really want in the first place. "Who do these Tomkeys think they are?" my sister Lisa said. The night after Halloween, we were sitting around watching TV when the doorbell rang. Visitors were infrequent in our house, so while my father stayed behind, my mother, sisters, and I ran downstairs in a group, opening the door to discover the entire Tomkey family on our front stoop. The parents looked as they always had, but the son and daughter were dressed in costumes. She is a ballerina, and he is some kind of a rodent with terry cloth ears and a tail made from what looked to be an extension cord. It seemed they had spent the previous evening isolated at the lake and had missed the opportunity to observe Halloween. "So, well, I guess we're trick-or-treating now, if that's okay," Mr. Tomkey said. I attributed their behavior to the fact that they didn't have a TV, but television didn't teach you everything. Asking for candy on Halloween was called trick-or-treating, but asking for candy on November 1st was called begging, and it made people uncomfortable. This was one of the things you were supposed to learn by simply being alive, and it angered me that the Tomkeys did not understand it. "Why, of course it's not too late," my mother said. "Kids, why don't you run and get the candy?" "But the candy is gone," my sister Gretchen said. "You gave it away last night." "Not that candy," my mother said, "the other candy. Why don't you run and go get it?" "You mean our candy?" Lisa said. "The candy that we earned?" This was exactly what our mother was talking about, but she didn't want to say this in front of the Tomkeys. In order to spare their feelings, she wanted them to believe that we always kept a bucket of candy lying around the house, just waiting for someone to knock on the door and ask for it. "Go on now," she said. "Hurry up." My room was situated right off the foyer, and if the Tomkeys had looked in that direction, they would have seen my bed and the brown paper bag marked, "My candy, keep out." I didn't want them to know how much I had, and so I went into my room and shut the door behind me. Then I closed the curtains and emptied my bag onto the bed, searching for whatever was the crummiest. All my life, chocolate has made me ill. I don't know if I'm allergic or what, but even the smallest amount leaves me with a blinding headache. Eventually, I learned to stay away from it, but as a child, I refused to be left out. The brownies were eaten, And when the pounding began, I would blame the grape juice or my mother's cigarette smoke or the tightness of my glasses. Anything but the chocolate. My candy bars were poison, but they were brand name, and so I put them in pile number one, which definitely would not go to the Tomkeys. Out in the hallway, I could hear my mother straining for something to talk about. "A boat," she said. "That sounds marvelous. Can you just drive it right into the water?" "Actually, we have a trailer," Mr. Tomkey said, "so what we do is back it into the lake." "Oh, a trailer. What kind is it?" "Well, it's a boat trailer," Mr. Tomkey said. "Right, but is it wooden or..." "You know, I guess what I'm asking is, what style trailer do you have?" Behind my mother's words were two messages. The first and most obvious was, yes, I am talking about boat trailers, but also I am dying. The second, meant only for my sisters and me, was, if you do not immediately step forward with that candy, you will never again experience freedom, happiness, or the possibility of my warm embrace. I knew that it was just a matter of time before she came into my room and started collecting the candy herself, grabbing indiscriminately with no regard to my rating system. Had I been thinking straight, I would have hidden the most valuable items in my dresser drawer, but instead, panicked by the thought of her hand on my doorknob, I tore off the wrappers and began cramming the candy bars into my mouth, desperately, like someone in a contest. Most were miniature, which made them easier to accommodate, but still there was only so much room, and it was hard to chew and fit more in at the same time. The headache began immediately, and I chalked it up to tension. My mother told the Tomkey she needed to check on something, and then she opened the door and stuck her head inside my room. "What the hell are you doing?" she whispered, but my mouth was too full to answer. "I'll just be a moment," she called. And as she closed the door behind her and moved towards my bed, I began breaking the waxed lips and candy necklaces pulled from pile number two. These were the second best things I had received, and while it hurt to destroy them, it would have hurt even more to give them away. I had just started to mutilate a miniature box of Red Hots when my mother pried them from my hands, accidentally finishing the job for me. BB-sized pellets clattered onto the floor, and as I followed them with my eyes, she snatched up a roll of Necco wafers. "Not those," I pleaded. But rather than words, my mouth expelled chocolate. Chewed chocolate, which fell onto the sleeve of her sweater. "Not those, not those." She shook her arm, and the mound of chocolate dropped like a horrible turd upon my bedspread. "You should look at yourself," she said. "I mean, really look at yourself." Along with the Necco wafers, she took several Tootsie Pops and a half dozen caramels wrapped in cellophane. I heard her apologize to the Tomkeys for her absence, and then I heard my candy hitting the bottom of their bags. "What do you say?" Mrs. Tomkey asked, and the children answered, "Thank you." While I was in trouble for not bringing my candy sooner, my sisters were in more trouble for not bringing theirs at all. We spent the early part of the evening in our rooms. Then one by one we eased our way back upstairs and joined our parents in front of the TV. I was the last to arrive and took a seat on the floor beside the sofa. The show was a Western, and even if my head had not been throbbing, I doubt I would have had the wherewithal to follow it. A posse of outlaws crested a rocky hilltop, squinting at a flurry of dust advancing from the horizon, and I thought again of the Tomkeys, and of how alone and out of place they had looked in their dopey costumes. "What was up with that kid's tail?" I asked. "Shh," my family said. For months I had protected and watched over these people, but now, with one stupid act, they had turned my pity into something hard and ugly. The shift wasn't gradual but immediate, and it provoked an uncomfortable feeling of loss. We hadn't been friends, the Tomkeys and I, but still I had given them the gift of my curiosity. Wondering about the Tomkey family had made me feel generous, but now I would have to shift gears and find pleasure in hating them. The only alternative was to do as my mother had instructed and take a good look at myself. This was an old trick designed to turn one's hatred inward, and while I was determined not to fall for it, it was hard to shake the mental picture snapped by her suggestion. Here is a boy sitting on a bed, his mouth smeared with chocolate. He's a human being, but also he's a pig, surrounded by trash and gorging himself so that others may be denied. Were this the only image in the world, you'd be forced to give it your full attention. But fortunately, there were others. The stagecoach, for instance, coming round the bend with a cargo of gold. This shiny new Mustang convertible. This teenage girl, her hair a beautiful mane, sipping Pepsi through a straw. One picture after another, on and on until the news, and whatever came on after the news.
David Sedaris reading one of the stories, Us and Them, from his book Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. David Sedaris will appear at the Virginia Theater April 18th at 8 p.m. Seating is reserved. For ticket information, call the box office, the number 356-9063. And our congratulations this afternoon to our listeners who picked up an audio sampler of the audio version of Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. Later this month, we'll have another opportunity for you to pick up one of these audio samplers, as well as an autographed copy of the book, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Let's find out what happened in the end today on the Chicago Board of Trade. I think it was a pretty wild day. Here to tell us what happened, Todd Gleason.
Oh, yeah, one of those days you'd like to sit and just watch the numbers go up and down, or at least I do from time to time. Celeste, a big day at the Chicago Board of Trade. Out of Washington this morning, USDA releasing its crop perspective, plantings reports and the grain stocks reports. And in the bean pit, traders taking at first glance a look at the bean numbers and saying, hey, we need to run this thing higher. And they certainly did. Had a high today, in the May contract of 661. But near the close, and she broke just a bit about 10 o'clock, and then again near the close broke pretty sharply at 627.5 on a settlement price, all the way down to 623. They were down 13.5 cents in the nearby bean contract. That's the May. Put in a key reversal day on the charts. That's a higher high than yesterday, a lower low, and a lower close. Fortunately for us, we have Dan Zwicker on hand with us this afternoon, their technician among the crew of analysts that we have here each and every week. I think there are 17 total, but Dan probably the most techie of the crew. He'll talk all about that, I'm certain, today during the closing market report. Be sure to tune in at that point. We'll give you a complete look at the prospective plantings report and the grain stocks reports as well at that time. Now, the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they ended the day at 115 on the grains floor. In the May wheat pit, they had a high today of 341.5, a low at 330. Settlement price there at 331. They were off 2.5 cents. July 349.5, the high, the low at 340. Settlement price at 341, down 1.5 cents. And September contract for the wheat, 354.5, the high, the low at 345.5, and a settlement price at 346 in the SEPs. And they were down 2.5 cents for the day. In the December contract now, 364, the high, the low at 354. Settlement price at 355.5, down 1.25. And the March wheat, 368, the high, the low at 361.5. Settlement price at 361.5, and they were down 1.5 cents for the day. May corn, 218.25, high, low at 211.5. Settled 213, they were up 0.5. July futures, 226, the high, the low at 220, a settlement price at 221. They were 3/4 higher. In September futures, 232, the high, the low at 226.25. Settlement price, 227.5. In the SEPs, up 1.25 for the day. The December contract managed a 0.5 cent gain, 240.25 the high, the low at 234.5, a settlement price at 234.75. Once again, that December corn up 0.5 cent. USDA, by the way, only finding a little less than about 500,000 acres of extra acres that farmers are expected to plant this year, as opposed to the somewhere between 1 and 3 million acres that many corn analysts were looking to have planted for the year. March corn now, 245.75 the high, the low at 240.5, settlement price at 241. They were up 0.01. And the May futures, 248.25, the high, the low at 244, settled 244, up 1 for the day. May oats, 176, the high, the low at 157.75, settlement price at 157.75. This pit just goes nuts every day, down 20 cents today. July futures, 161.5, the high, the low at 148.5, settled on that low. They were down 10.75. From the soy complex, lots of action for the day. Moved up to a high of $6.61 in the nearby May, the low at $6.23, settlement price $6.27.5. They were off 13.5 for the day. And the July future, 664.5 the high, the low at 632, settled 636. They were down a dime. August soybean, 663 the high, the low at 627, settled 629.5, down 13.25. And the September future, 642.5 the high, the low at 613, settled 619. They were off 4 cents. And November contract down 5.75 in the bean pit for the day. 630 the high, the low at 604, settlement price at 605.5. They were off 5.75 for your November contract. January soybeans next year, 630.5 the high, the low at 607, settlement price at 608.5, and they were down 4.75 for the day. Bean meal futures now, 198.50 the high, the low at 185, settled 187. They were down 50 for the day. And the July bean meal, 199.50 the high, the low at 187.50, settled 188.80, down 360. Bean oil futures, 22.90 the settlement price. They were off 58 for the day, 24.05 the high, the low at 22.85. And July, 24.15 the high, the low at 23. July bean oil settled 23.03, and they were down 58 as well. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, today was a higher day for livestock. April feeder cattle, 108.10 the high, 106.60 the low, 107.67.5 the settlement, that up 127.5. May, 105.75 the high, 104.80 the low, 104.95 the settlement, that up 10. April live cattle, 90.10 the high, 89.40 the low, finishing at 89.82.5, up 7.5. June live cattle, 85.75 the high, 85.10 the low, 85.25 the settlement, that up 7.5. April lean hogs, 68.80 the high, the low, 68.02.5, the settlement, 68.70, that unchanged. May, 77.22.5 the high, 75.97.5 the low, the settlement, 77 even, that up 45. June, 79.47.5 the high, 78.55 the low, 79.27.5 the settlement, that up 37.5. July, 78.25 the high, the low, 77.20 the settlement, 77.90, that up 42.5. And May bellies, 96.95 the high, the low, 95.70. The settlement, 96.25, that up a nickel. The Dow off 18 points at 10,523. The S&P 500 up 2 at 1183.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Daniel Deschamps from Timmins, Canada writes, "Dear Dr. Science, when everything goes blank, what color is it? White?"